welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 472. My name is James Gilmore, and joining me, my PGC brother-in-arms, weary from battle, it's Rick Cowley.
You managed to drag out my introduction long enough that I didn't have to announce myself mid-yawn.
Oh, that's good. Yes. That's been a running theme the past couple of days. So we mentioned it last week, but we have just returned from Pocket Gamer Connects 2019 in London. It was the biggest show we've ever done. Regular listeners know what the show's all about, but yeah, it's a games conference. We started out small 5-6 years ago, and now it's like the biggest thing. And it's always exhausting. We've basically broken the venue this time around because there are just too many people, so we're going to have to look into that next year. But as always, it was great. The London crowd are always super lovely, and we're getting to the point now, especially with the feedback from talking to all the developers. And I know this sounds quite busy, and a lot of people will listen to this show just because they want to hear, like, what are the games out this week? Just shut up and tell me what the games are and whether you like them or not. But the people who make the games, this is where they all come. And because we've been doing it for a while now, it's really nice atmosphere with a lot of developers who all now know each other and hang out. And like, I get to run into people whom I genuinely like. Like, even though I'm upstairs doing interviews, Colin Lane swang by. Colin Lane, yep. Who makes all Wrestling and all those lovely games, who's, you know, we're now quite sort of friendly with because he always pops up and tells us what he's doing. And it's just like, hey, it's just really nice to see them again, see what they're working on and all of that. You got more of that than me, probably, because you were at the journalist's bar, weren't you?
Yes, I had lots of developers just swinging by, showing me their games and having a nice chat. Colin Lane, again, swung by as well.
He gets about that boy.
And yeah, it was just a really nice... There's lots of stuff going on, and there's lots of talks and stuff like that, but it always feels quite chilled and relaxed. You don't really see people running about desperately trying to find meetings and stuff like that. It's kind of a relaxed vibe. Yeah. To the whole thing. And probably from the organizer's point of view, from all our other work colleagues, and from yourself, who was running all the cameras and stuff, a whole different experience and a lot more stressful than just having to stand at a table and look at games.
But the end result is worth it. Like, you know, it's a great way to reach out and get everybody to come together and other vaguely hippie-sounding stuff. But honestly, of course, there's this big business angle and people are making connections and appointments and sorting out getting publishers and financing for their games, but it's all just a facilitating thing to help the big old industry tick along, and hopefully at the end of it someone is able to make a nice game which we enjoy playing, which is ultimately the point of all of this from our perspective. So yeah, great show. If you guys are listening, you've never been before, we're doing like 5 this year now. So we've had London, we're doing Seattle, we're doing Hong Kong for the first time, Jordan, we're doing that. We're doing Helsinki, as always. So plenty of opportunities. If you haven't already tried out PGC, come along. Give a look. I guarantee it'll be worth your time. So we've got some stuff to report from that show. I've been talking to lots of developers, publishers, and ads guys, and I've got some information about the future of advertising. It's a sticky subject in the free-to-play universe, and I know you guys will have opinions about this either way, listeners. I've got the skinny on what's coming next for you. I've also got some deets about the next genre that's going to take over casual gaming, hyper-casual gaming. Rick has got some games he's actually played at PGC, some stuff that's going to be coming out in the not-too-distant future. And we've got actual new releases, including Alien Blackout, the much-anticipated slash reviled mobile tie-in to Alien Isolation, along with a brand new Angry Birds game. We've got some ARPG action in the form of Langrisser. It's a bit Fire Emblem, but is it any good? Detective Gallows out this week, War of Genesis, and more. First, the news. Part of PGC is the Mobile Games Awards. This is the official award ceremony for the mobile games industry that we launched as a company last year. This was the second installment of it. It was a great fun show. We hosted at BAFTA, and we have all the big folks down to celebrate their games, their live ops, their audiovisual accompaniments, their storytelling achievements, all the categories that you might expect. People's Choice was something that you guys could vote for if you are over there on PG.com, a regular reader. You had the chance to stick your opinion into the slot and see what came out. And what came out was World of Warships Blitz, which was like not surprising because it's a massive thing and part of the World of Tanks entity. And, you know, I wouldn't like to guess how many players it's got, billions. I was slightly surprised that that's what the PG audience went for.
Sorry, I'm not over the put your opinion in the slot and see what it comes out. What does that even mean?
I might be mixing my metaphors. Look, it's been a long week, okay? You of all people.
Yeah, I also didn't foresee that coming from our audience. Like, there was a bunch of other games. There's like Asphalt 9 was on there. There was probably Shadowgun Legends. Everyone's talking about that. But no, World of Warships got a huge amount of traction. Thank you to everyone who voted for it and for voting on everything else. But yeah, it's good to see a game that you don't expect to win come out of nowhere and take it.
Well, the thing is, the games that we like from a critical perspective, if we're playing lots and lots of games every day, and you know what we tend to get excited about is when we see something new and slightly different pop up that doesn't fit the standard molds, and we go, ooh, and then get very excited about it. And then it's maybe premium and nobody downloads it, so... It's just like you see it a lot with films as well. You get the critical darlings, which then nobody watches and they make no money.
Yeah.
While all the, you know, the Transformers gets 5% Rotten Tomatoes and then makes a billion. So we're not saying that this is a Transformers and bad, objectively, like Transformers is. But it's obviously a huge franchise, and it's kind of another case of the silent majority thing where, you know, free-to-play works because loads of people... happy to use it, but all we hear about are people complaining about the model, yet it makes billions, so obviously the most people are happy to hand their money over. So in this case, congratulations to World of Warships Blitz, but all the little games you were talking about just then, they also got their nods too. So for example, best storytelling went to Florence by Mountains, which I think is well deserved, and a really, again, an interesting way of telling a story. Some people would even argue whether it's a game or not, a bit like those walking simulators.
Don't start that.
I know. But it's a lovely little sort of half an hour to an hour experience, if you like, that you are involved in. And it tells its story beautifully, and it's just a great little thing. Lovely experience. Plus, you've got the likes of technical achievements. You know, best audiovisual accomplishment went to Asphalt 9 Legends, which is fair because it's a very, very good-looking game. Can't knock the visuals, even if you're not interested in the way it controls. Game of the Year, not a huge surprise that it went to Fortnite, just because it straddles every platform and just owns every platform at the moment, it seems, doesn't it?
It owns the cultural everything sphere. Everyone knows what Fortnite is.
Yeah.
Like, people are doing the dances across the world in various locations and other mediums and stuff like that. So
you know it's broken through, and you know it's like the game of the moment, in the same way that, for example, Grand Theft Auto was the game of the moment when it came out, like GTA 3 and that, when it's in all the mainstream newspapers going, is this damaging our children? That's the bellwether. That's the way you monitor whether a game has made the cultural zeitgeist. And that's what's happening with Fortnite. We've had all of the, our kids addicted to Fortnite stuff. So you're like, all right, then here we go. I guess this is it for this year. So game of the year for enslaving our children to their TV screens. Well done, Epic, who also got Best Developer, incidentally. You can see the full lineup of our awards and the winners on the site. And obviously, we'll let you know when it comes time for next year and new votes. So get prepped, get your opinions ready for the slot. The opinion slot. So, I was teasing stuff about ads before, about how ads have changed over the years. So we started with... no ads at the beginning, or maybe ads in-game. You'd play FIFA and there would be a little pop-up ad for Carlsberg or something on the banners at the back. That's a nice way of integrating booze into your games, you monsters. And then in mobile gaming, it was, first of all, little pop-up ads and banner ads that would appear. Boop. And then as time went on, video became the thing. So now when you're playing a free-to-play game, you get a pop-up 30-second video, which you can't quit out of, which is really annoying. And so people are constantly looking for ways to monetize better. How are we going to engage users? Oh, I've been hearing a lot of that this week. Engage users, onboarding. Puke. And the way that they're looking to do that now, apparently, the new one, programmatic ads, kids. Look out for this. Playable adverts. So I talked to a couple of companies who actually make these. And I was like, so what is the deal with this? Because I've heard a little bit about it, and I can't remember if I've actually seen one, because I try and avoid pressing anything on adverts when they pop up. So maybe I've already played one, inverted commas, I just didn't do anything. But the idea is that the adverts for games themselves will be playable. And that doesn't mean, obviously, that an actual full version of the game will pop up. You can play it for 30 seconds and it goes away again, because that wouldn't work and you couldn't load that in the middle of someone else's game. So it's a way of how do you convey how your game plays in a very short space of time using effectively video and trigger points. So that's what this is. It's like there's a video of gameplay going on, and then at a certain point, if you tap or if you swipe or do something, you're effectively activating the next video.
Mm-hmm.
But you can obviously create the illusion that it's a gameplay, you know, mechanic. So if your warrior charges up to make a strike and then pauses, then you press and it activates the strike. You know, all you're doing is triggering animations, which is what happens in games anyway. That's how a bit of game design. That's how that works. But this is doing it in a very simple, basic video way. How do you feel about this, Rick?
I feel like we've been down this road before.
Okay.
With games like Game of War and Mobile Strike, I always remember them having like these weird playable ads that were nothing like the game, where you like it was turned into like a weird tower defense thing, and you just dragged things onto the screen, and then like yeah.
See, I thought they weren't even really playable. I thought that was kind of a fake out. Like it animates on the screen, and then you go to press it, and it basically just like plays the next animation, and then pushes you through to buy the game. Like I didn't think there was any actual gameplay you could do. It was just like a trick to make you think you were going to play, and then they just went no, and then tried to push you to the App Store.
No, there have been playable ads before.
Okay.
I remember this being a bit like the people coming out about it a couple of years ago, and then rewarded video ad became the thing.
Yes.
Which is where, you know, you opt in to view videos rather than them popping up, and then you get something in-game for watching them, which I always thought was the best model anyway.
Yeah, it's the extra life system in a lot of games, isn't it?
Exactly, and like double coins and stuff like that. And playable ads have been a thing, particularly with the rise of like HTML5. I remember a lot of developers getting in on that because you could make sort of smaller versions of the games. Like Toon Blast, I believe, has playable ads of that kind.
Okay.
So I'm not against it, per se. I just... Pop-up ads in general just completely breaks the flow of the game.
Mm.
I mean, obviously, it makes sense if you die in a game that has death of some kind or fail, and then you get an ad.
A natural punctuation point, isn't it?
Yeah, so I can kind of see it working, and I guess if you're actually sat there playing something else, at least you are having a decent time. The problem is you end up playing the same game over and over and over and over and over again.
Because
there's only so many people making these things, and there's only so much ad space they can buy. So you'll probably get sick of them within like the first couple of times you see it. So I don't know. A good mix of playable ad and video is probably going to be where people will stick with.
Mm.
I don't see playable ads becoming the new de facto advertising standard.
It's interesting watching people just trying to find new ways to monetize. And that sentence doesn't sound interesting at all, especially to someone like me who's more interested in the games. But whether we like it or not, this stuff massively impacts the way that we experience games. Like in some cases, I feel games are ruined by bad advertisements and bad free-to-play stuff pushed into it. Some games are fine and work quite well with, like in harmony with their monetization model, and it doesn't feel horribly destructive to the gameplay experience. Whereas when this stuff is done badly, it ruins things that might otherwise be quite good. So I do have an interest in it in a weird sort of way, because like the better the systems are, the less intrusive or the more smoothly they integrate with the gameplay, the better the games end up being as a result. It's almost like damage control interest, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Please get it right, because I don't want you to ruin something nice.
I guess the thing you have to remember is that advertising isn't going to go away.
Mm.
So we might as well take an interest in how people are going to advertise to us and then help shape how we want to be advertised to. Because we can't just stop people from making free-to-play games. We can't stop people from advertising to us. We might as well see what's happening, see what's changing, and engage with certain things and don't engage with other things, so that then we can sort of collaborate, I guess, with how we're being sold to. It's not ideal.
No, but you can get a little bit of pushback. I mean, famously, Netflix and I think Amazon Prime, they'll occasionally introduce new things like, hey, we're going to put adverts in between our shows. And the pushback is so violent that they drop it like 5 hours later. And go, oh, yeah, sorry, we were just testing it. It was just a rollout. Yeah. Remember when Instagram decided to make things go sideways instead of upside top to bottom for about half an hour before everyone went they've ruined Instagram, and then Instagram said, oh, it was like an error.
Yeah.
It's like we've accidentally created all of this code that completely changes the layout of Instagram. It's all right, it's deleted now. Sometimes you can make a difference. So I do think we owe it to ourselves a little bit to pay attention without going completely mental and screaming the rooftops and sounding hysterical when you're doing it. Just like look at things and see what works and what doesn't. And as for playable ads, the one thing I asked the guys who were developing, like, do you have pushback from developers who are like, I don't really want someone else's game popping up in the middle of my game?
Yeah.
Like, the advert's one thing, but an actual different gameplay experience suddenly being injected into the middle of yours. Have you got any pushback from that? And they said, yeah, like, they actually do have to try and, to some degree, like, convince some people that this is a good idea. Because I can imagine, you know, as a game creator, you're like, but I don't want... Imagine someone's playing my game and then a little 30-second thing pops up with gameplay and they're like, oh, this is much better, and they quit out of your game. I can imagine there being a little bit of insecurity. But the idea is it's always give and take, and, you know, there's a good chance that if they're part of the same network, your game will also be advertised in the other person's game.
Yeah.
So it's a give and take and back and forth. But yes, programmatic ads, something to look forward to there. And the other thing that kept coming up at PGC was hyper-casual. That's the genre that's getting all the chat at the moment, because... You know, when we went from premium games, which were anywhere from kind of casual to mid-core to hardcore, then free-to-play came out and a lot of people were saying it was very casual, you know, very easy to play games. And to be fair, the biggest game that came out on mobile back at the beginning, you know, the Angry Birds breakthrough, that's a casual game. That is a one finger pull back, you know, that it's a very simple thing that everyone can play. That was the point. Not simple enough, apparently. Because now what people are getting very excited by, or what's making an incredible amount of money, is hyper-casual. By this, the best example to use is the publisher Voodoo. They are the company that are pushing out lots and lots and lots of very, very simple, incredibly streamlined games. One example being Fireballs 3D. That is a game where you basically control a little cannon that fires balls at a tower. And the tower is made up of lots of different layers, like stacked cake layers, one on top of the other. And you need to blast away at the base of the tower. And every time you blast, the base layer goes and explodes, and the whole thing chunts down a layer. And you're basically shooting, bam, 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 and the tower shortens and shortens till there's no tower left. And there's a little gem on the top. Blast that. That's it. That's the game. So you're just pressing to tap. The thing that the game throws at you is there are spinning barriers around the base of these towers. So sometimes you'll have to wait for the barrier to move. So you just get a little window of opportunity where you can fire a couple of shots, and then you have to stop. And if your ball hits any of the barriers once, bang, that's it, game over. And you're just trying to build a chain. You're just trying to complete as many levels as you can once you've finished, all the way back to the beginning. So the aim is to get high score, complete as many levels in one continuous flow. Mm-hmm. Super, super simple, incredibly minimal graphics. It's not like a pretty looking thing. It's very bare bones. It is literally something you can play a level of in about 7 seconds and just one thumb, meh, 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 meh. And they're making incredible amounts of money. Again, from our perspective, where we're interested in perhaps more like long form experience, or we've come from a background of liking narrative games or big involved things, or we also like console, it's very, very easy, as I have done, to sort of turn up your nose at this stuff.
Yeah.
Be like, ugh. And I'm not saying that I play these games, because I don't, really. But at the same time, seems like a lot of people are. Incredible amount of people are, in fact. Just because it is game. It is gameplay. And I know that sounds an obvious thing to say, but it's like boiled down to its rawest, most distilled form. It is just pure, incredibly simple, very, very small closed loop gameplay. And it is connecting with people in a way that a lot of us aren't paying attention to, I think.
Yeah. Well, again, it's like, this is mobile gaming. Mm. Like, super short experiences designed to be played with, like, a thumb while you're waiting for a bus or, you know, just doing something else in your life. Like, this is kind of what mobile gaming always wanted to be.
Mm.
It's just that mobile tried... And, hang on, I need to think about how I'm going to phrase this without sounding offensive.
Okay.
But, like, mobile games are sort of fighting with console games all the time, because mobile games are trying to be taken seriously, and we get bigger things like Alien Blackout this week and that kind of thing. And console gamers and PC gamers kind of turn up their nose because they think of mobile as smaller experiences. But a lot of the time, that's what mobile games are. Smaller, simple experiences that you just kind of play without really thinking about it and just have 5 minutes of fun just to keep your brain going during the day. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. And there's also nothing wrong with trying to make the platform bigger and better and have bigger experiences and cater for everybody. I don't know if any of that made sense.
No, it's right. And funny enough, this year gave us both ends of the spectrum. Well, 2018 did anyway. What we saw on one hand was the rise of these incredibly hyper-casual games. And if you just Google Voodoo, you'll see a load of these lists, and the download stats are incredible, and the revenue for them. And there'll be games maybe you've never heard of, but they're making all the money all over the world. So hyper-casual, incredibly simple, mobile-tailored, exclusive content. And then on the other end, we've got Fortnite, which conquered mobile, iPhone and iPad and Android this year, which is exactly that, the full, proper, hardcore, inverted commas, gaming experience, console standard, cross-play with consoles.
Mm.
So that thing that mobile gaming is sometimes looking for, or the thing that console or PC enthusiasts might dismiss mobile for, which is, oh, it's not really serious games, you can play proper games on them. We play now the biggest game of the year on mobile as well. The hardcore game that everybody is currently playing, that is massive on mobile. And mobile players are playing with one another, they're playing with console gamers. So that is, I feel like, a massive breakthrough this year, where you've managed to get a cross-platform game that's huge. It would be like Rocket League coming out on iPad. Mm. You know, like something that big that's got that many players and that much groundswell support being played on a mobile just in the same way as you're playing it on your PC or your PS4. So 2018 gave us like both extremes.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. And it, if anything, all it shows you is that the platform is incredibly versatile.
Mm.
It can do both of these things. And there are loads of kids who are just sitting there playing first-person shooter stuff on it. And then there are people who are playing these incredibly simplistic games who probably aren't, inverted commas, core gamers or whatever, just to pass the time. And they're both making an astonishing amount of money and making a huge dent in the games industry, to the point where, like, mobile is now, and we always say this, but it genuinely is true, the stats this year are ridiculous. We're basically, the mobile is a bigger industry. It makes more revenue than, like, console, PC gaming combined. It just smashes everything. So, make of that what you will. But you, enough of this industry chat, have been playing actual games.
Video games. Journalist bar. On the mobiles.
Lovely.
Yes, I did that.
What are a couple of highlights from you, from what you saw?
So the one that's stuck in my mind quite firmly that we saw, and we haven't written about it yet because it's going to be difficult to write about, I think, is a game called Shadow's Edge.
Okay.
And this is, it's a game, it's not really a game, it's hard to describe, but basically it's been designed for children and teenagers who have been given a long-term diagnosis of, like, a really serious illness.
Right.
Like, chronic pain is the main sort of thing. So chronic pain and chronic illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a game that sort of helps children and teenagers explore the feelings that they are going through and the new emotions and how to process the fact that they probably won't have a, quote, normal life kind of thing.
Mm.
And it does this by giving you sort of a small world that you have to go around and find pages of a diary that are floating around. And when you tap on that, it asks you a question, sort of like, how are you feeling today? Or what are your, like, favorite things that make you feel happy and this kind of thing? It's stuff that you get asked in therapy. Like,
yeah.
these are actual therapy questions. And then you have to write something in response. And it can just be gibberish. I think they're working on making sure that you don't just write gibberish, but you can write as little or as long as you want to sort of describe how you're feeling. You just get it out there and on somewhere.
Mm.
And as you find these pages, the world kind of improves and grows because you are yourself improving and growing and learning to understand how to deal with things. And the other sort of gameplay aspect is that in various parts across the game world, you can tap a wall and then you can start graffitiing it and you can make your own sort of expression and stuff. And there's some templates that you can fill in if you're not too good at art but still want to express yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can make a little comment and post it on their version of it, their, like, Instagram in-game kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where other players will be able to see it and share likes and other emojis and stuff like that. And it's just really beautiful. It's quite simple. It's obviously designed with a younger audience in mind, and it's got kind of that cool, radical edge kind of thing. The developers have clearly worked closely with both, like, people of the age who are going to be playing it so that they know that other kids are actually going to enjoy it and connect with it, and also therapists and doctors and stuff like that, to make sure the things that they are saying and the questions they're asking are actually helpful, and the game is going to help children and teenagers and basically anybody process what's going on.
Right.
And sort of handle the, mostly the sort of the depression and anxiety that comes out of being told that you have a chronic illness.
Mm.
It's available now. You can actually play it and download it. It's totally free. There's no ads of any kind. You can just go check it out and see what other people have made. And they were showing us some of the things that kids have made and people have made. And it's like people who are just sat in their hospital beds making these beautiful things to express how they're feeling and like share inspirational messages with other people and stuff. Mm. And it's just broke my heart to see, because it's so lovely and beautiful and important. And I feel like it needs all the help it can get for people to go and see it and just play it and stuff like that. And in the end, I have a friend who has chronic illness, and I got in touch with her and was just like, there's this game and now we're talking again and we haven't spoken in months and this kind of thing. And it's just like, it's made a real impact on me.
What's the name of it again?
Shadow's Edge.
Shadow's Edge, okay.
Yeah, and I didn't expect to see anything like that at Pocket Gamer Connects, and it's just completely changed me and had a really positive, nice effect on me. Even if you don't have like a chronic illness, even if you're just sort of feeling a bit depressed, a bit sad and lonely, this is a really good starting point for like maybe seeking out therapy, I would suggest.
Okay. Well, that sounds genuinely interesting.
I believe they're also trying to get it sort of FDA approved as like a therapeutic tool.
Well, even just the attempt is an interesting thing. And
yeah,
this comes back to mobile being a ubiquitous device that everyone mostly has access to in some form. You know, you don't have to have an iPhone X, you know, cost $1,000 in order to get hold of this stuff if it's just basic tech that presumably runs on more lower end devices.
Yeah, it's fairly simple graphically, and it looks fairly simple to play and load, so it's clearly targeting as many devices as it can.
And anything that gives people access to a little bit of assistance or guidance or even just positivity is quite nice.
Exactly.
In the toxic world that is the internet.
Yeah.
I found that on the App Store, yeah, so Shadow's Edge is the name of that one. That's free, so you can take a look at that. What else did you get your hands on?
On the complete opposite end of the spectrum... There's this wonderful game called White Paw coming from the developer that I can't remember the name of.
Oh, I saw this because I had to cut it into the trailer for the big indie pitch. They were part of that.
Yes. And this, I've seen it before. I saw it at Develop last year, and then they came by the Journalist Bar again this year with like a new and improved version. I think I might have actually suggested some of the things that they've added to the game, so that's quite cool.
Making games instead of destroying them this time. Good, well done.
So basically, you play as a cat. Like it's like a supervillain's cat, but the supervillain's gone missing, and there's a mystery going on, and you're not entirely sure what's happening. And it's a puzzle game, so you... It's kind of like Golf Peaks, where you have like a deck of moves per area.
Oh, yeah.
And you just tap the next move and then your cat moves to the next block and it's all on a square grid kind of thing.
So
it'll have like a Tetris style two up and one across, and you'll go to the right when you press it. So you tap that and you move over there and you tap around. You just use your deck of moves to get around, basically. So incredibly simple controls. Looks gorgeous, particularly the lighting and the setting and like how they're doing it and stuff. And the gameplay looks really simple. They've got, I think it's the voiceover guy from the Stanley Parable.
Oh, yes.
He's doing the narration for it, and they're trying to focus hard on story and stuff like that. It is quite funny, as well as being like a fun little game as a cat. And it just looks really clever and interesting, and it stars a cat, and I love cats, so...
So you're such a mark.
Pretty much.
Got your number.
It should come out, I think, mid this year. They told me sort of the month they're aiming for, but I don't remember when it was.
Right.
But probably like June, July. It will be a premium game. I think they're shooting for $4.99. I think everyone should keep an eye out for that. White Paw. There is a preview on the site, because I quickly wrote it up after I saw it. So, yeah.
All right. Sounds interesting. Incidentally, if you are listening and you are going to be turning up to any of the Pocket Gamer events in the future, and you are a developer... Journalist Bar is the place to head to. You can also get involved in the Big Indie Pitch, which is the event we've talked about loads, but it's another way of getting your game in front of lots of fairly big and important people within the industry, publishers, game developers, and financiers, and all the rest of it. So it's always worth a go. if you maybe want to be talked about on the show and the site in the future. So go give it a look. Out and about this week, let's lead with Alien Blackout, which appeared £4.99, $4.99. It's not a sequel to Alien Isolation, but sort of is. It's a spiritual spin-off, I think, best way to describe it. You take control of Amanda Ripley, her of Alien Isolation fame, and instead of you running around first-person style trying to avoid the xenomorph and batter scary-ass-looking androids in the head, you are trying to help a crew on an entirely different ship. So you are sequestered away in the air vents, and you have got usually between one and three different air vent ports that you can open and close. If you've seen the Alien movie, they're those ones that look like, let's call them what they are, sphincters. Those little orifices things that sort of spin and close. And you've got a little control desk which gives you access to the maps of the space station. And from there, you can go in and hack into the control systems of the craft. So you can open and close doors, you can activate and deactivate motion sensors, and obviously you can track the location of the crew on the ship. And it's up to you to try and guide the crew members to certain points within the ship. For example, they might need to reactivate a power console, or they might need to activate an onboard transit system, like a train system or something like that. And then once they've done that, you might need to take them somewhere else. And so the little marker points will pop up on the map and you guide them wherever they need to go. You can do this by actually dragging on the character dots on the map and tracing a line, so you can tell them exactly where you want to go, almost like an RTS. Or you can just sort of leave them to their own devices and they'll generally wander in the direction that the waypoint is located. Obviously, in the background of all this, there's a xenomorph running around trying to munch their faces off. And the only way you can track them is with occasional motion sensors. So there will be certain corridors that have motion sensors placed in them. You can't move them around. They're just there. And you can choose whether to activate or deactivate them. There are also cameras in a lot of the different rooms. So you can tap on the cameras to see. Some of them will be static. Some of them will sort of scrub backwards and forwards, pan left and right, to give you a view of what's going on in the room. If any of this sounds like Five Nights at Freddy's, it's because it's exactly like Five Nights at Freddy's.
You don't sound very enthused by that.
Well, now, it's... So, I won't bury the lead. It's not bad.
Mm.
It's just not great. So, on the plus side, looks fairly decent. It's got the decor. It's kept, obviously, the style of the original Alien 1979 movie and Alien Isolation, the game, which I'm a huge fan of that entire aesthetic. So that's quite nice for me. The scanner, the map, that all feels quite Alien/Aliens. Just little things like the very old-fashioned font that they're using that you get on, you know, CRT TVs and, you know, old computers, stuff like that. It's been made by people who do have a connection to the source material, so that's good. And keeping it as a horror game and using the idea of there just being this one creature which you can't see, and occasionally you catch flashes of it on the camera, and then it'll pop up, it will accidentally walk into the motion sensing corridor, and suddenly it's like, doot, doot, like red dot on there, and all the players start freaking out, and you have to tell them to hide. It's another thing you can do, interact with the players a little bit. So there are good moments of you tracking cameras. Crap, he's in that room. Oh no, and now he's in this bit, and I know where my character is on the map, and I need to make them hide for a moment while it walks by, and they're all heavy breathing, and you're monitoring their heart rate in the lower left corner. And you get these little moments of tension, these little kind of brief set-piece encounters where it's like, oh God, and everybody panics. And that's very Alien. That's what I'm looking for from an Alien game. I'm not looking for Colonial Marines. I'm not looking for gunning down swarms and swarms of them, massive violent shooter. That's not the vibe that I'm after from this franchise. So in that sense, it's doing all the right stuff. On the downside, there are 7 levels, and as Dave Aubrey says in the review that he wrote on the site and the video review you've got up, first two are kind of basically tutorials. And you know, I played it for the review and I was capturing footage from all the way up to about level 5, and it was all over fairly quickly. Put it that way. And it doesn't really develop into anything more than that premise I've just set up.
Right.
The complaint that we had in the review and that I agree with was like it needed like another stage of development for the gameplay. Mm-hmm. I wanted another mechanic thrown in. I wanted like, okay, now we're going to give one of the characters a motion tracker and they're going to wander around and open up different bits of the map. Or, you know, we're going to introduce some kind of like lift system where we'll travel between floors or some extra wrinkle, some extra layer to the gameplay where, okay, and now we're moving on to this bit. And that never really came. It could also do with about double the amount of levels, really, especially if you're paying £4.99 for it. Mm. And length is no guarantee of quality, but it felt like it needed more to be genuinely satisfying. It's not bad, and I'm glad that they took this approach, but yes, it is Five Nights at Freddy's, basically with alien dressing. And I think it needed a bit more than it gives you to be really like a proper, solid, definitely go and get this.
Mm.
So I don't know if you got a chance to have a go on it.
I had a very quick go on the first couple of levels, but I kept dying on the second one.
It is quite challenging.
I wasn't playing with audio, which...
Yeah, that does make things very difficult, especially
very difficult, especially when you have to like drop the thing to make sure the alien's not like coming in the vents to kill you.
Yeah, so
there's a lot of times where I would just go, "Oh, I haven't checked on the alien. Oh, there he is. I'm dead." And you have to redo the entire level.
He's right in your face suddenly. And yeah. The problem is I'm recording the footage, so I get this lag of about a second, 2 seconds. So I basically had to do it mostly visually, because by the time I heard the alien, and you can have to use the speakers to tell whether it's coming from the left or the right.
Yeah.
I'd cut back to Ripley's corridor and it was just there munching my face. Ah, bugger. But go check out the review, see the game running. We've got the review up on the AppSpy, oof, that's old school, Pocket Gamer YouTube channel as well, so you can see what the thing looks like in action. Talking about big franchises, Angry Birds, they are back with another game, and it's called Dream Blast, and it's got bubbles in it, but it's not Buster Move. If anything, we were talking about hyper-casual, this feels like it's falling into that camp. So this one has got the things you'd expect from like a Buster Move or a Bubble Witch Saga, where yes, there are loads of bubbles all clustered together, and the idea is to hit bubbles of matching colours, and then they will explode all the bubbles of that matching colour that they're in contact with. But instead of firing bubbles from the bottom of the screen up to the top, bubbles just fall down from the top of the screen and land in the bottom in like a little scoop or a valley or something. And so they're all on top of each other already. So you don't need to worry about firing or aiming, you just need to tap. And you don't need to worry about dragging or moving them around in the way that you do with like Match 3 puzzlers. They're all just on top of each other and you just need to see, there's three or more. Just tap that, tap that, tap that. So super, super simple. But the idea is when you tap a bunch of them, not only do they disappear, a bird will appear in their place in a little bubble. And the more you're able to pop in one go, so the more that are touching one another, the bigger that bird and bubble will be. And then the next wrinkle is you want to start popping different colours to create birds. And ideally, you want to create two birds next to each other. And then those two birds, when they touch, will merge to form a new one. So they start with a red bird. And then if you put two red birds together, you get like a yellow bird. And then likewise, manage to get two yellow birds together, that'll turn into something else. And so that's where you start to try and build and build and build and build. And then when you pop those, obviously they cause massive explosions and different area effects, depending on the kind of bird you're working with. Then the pigs appear and you have to destroy X number of pigs. Sometimes there are eggs that you need to get. And then they start throwing in different environmental scenarios, like the bubbles will fall down and they'll land on like a chain halfway up the level. And then you need to unlock a certain number of like pigs, for example, to get rid of the padlock. And then suddenly the chain breaks away and all the rest of the bubbles tumble down to the bottom of the screen. And then there's another thing you have to do. So they start putting like waves almost into the gameplay. It's super simple stuff. I've played it for about half an hour. It obviously works. It's slick and blah, 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 blah. I'll probably never play it again. It's just, you know, they're just pushing it into all the possible genres, and I think this feels like even more casual because it's all you need to do is tap. There's no swipe, there's no pull, there's no aim, there's no nothing. Just tap. So I guess they'll see if they can make some cash out of that one. Angry Birds Dream Blast is the name. You've been playing something on the Switch, the biggest release of the week.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Good start.
It's Piku Niku, P-I-K-U-N-I-K-U. So it's either Piku Niku or Piku Niku. I've been calling it Piku Niku.
Okay.
And I'm going to keep doing so.
You go.
So it's a weird little 2D platformer, sort of a puzzle game as well, physics-based, so there's all sort of objects to move about. You have very limited interaction with the world, so you can jump, you can curl up into a ball, which helps you sink to the bottom of water or just roll around faster, and you can kick, which is hilarious, and you will kick everything in sight, and it's the most beautiful thing you can do, because your kick just sends stuff flying. It is amazing. And it's one of those games where you're never really given any instruction on what to do, but in the end, it usually just revolves to kick the thing directly in front of you. That will probably solve your problem.
The walking cycle is amazing.
Oh, yeah, it's like... graphically, it's very simple, but also kind of beautiful in its simplicity. It's got a very kind of Donut County humor to it as well, with that kind of silly dialogue and style and everything. And then underneath it all, it's actually kind of like a... you're trying to take down capitalism, basically.
Oh, okay.
it's all this cute thing on the front, and then they keep advertising. It's like, take down a deep state conspiracy. It's like, oh, okay, fair enough.
Right.
So classic,
like a Flash game almost in the style of it.
Yeah. It's properly, like, kind of crappy, but purposefully so. And there are, like, elements of it that... like, there's cameras that start popping up in random bits to keep an eye on you, and you can see the cameras are sort of better animated than everything else in the game. So you can tell there is skill at work, and there's been a lot of time and effort put into making it as simple as possible. Yeah. But yeah, it does on its surface look kind of silly. And it is very silly, but it's also a lot of fun. It's a bit Metroidvania-y, which I'm not a huge fan of, and from what I played of it, there wasn't much... I don't think there was a fast travel system, so it was kind of, you know, you get to one point, then you've got to lumber all the way back to the start of the game just to do another objective, and then you've got to wander around and this kind of thing. And there's, like, when you re-enter an area, all the puzzles reset, so it doesn't matter that you've solved them all. You've got to go through... like, you can set up shortcuts for yourself, but when you re-enter the area, all the shortcuts will have gone.
Right.
Which is kind of a pain. So it's got its ups and downs. The one thing I would say, however, it has a co-op mode, which is completely separate from the main game. It's like 9 levels of co-op, and then a mini game called Bass Kick, which is like basketball, but except you can only kick a watermelon and you've got to get it in your opponent's hoop. Kind of like Rayman Legends had its kung fu football or whatever it was. And co-op is amazing. I jumped in with that very first with my girlfriend. It doesn't tell you any of the controls. We were just sat there working it out for ourselves. It doesn't tell you anything of what you're supposed to do. You just kind of have to work it out. It's all on one screen, and then when you get too far away from each other, it does that sort of Lego-style split-screen kind of thing. And you can kick each other, which led to many arguments.
Good.
But also is, like, a legitimate way to solve puzzles, because you can, like, one of you can jump on top of the other one, then they jump in the air, and then as they're jumping in the air, you can jump and boot them into a higher place to help get items and stuff. And the co-op levels are so tightly designed and well thought out. There were many points where we think we'd broken the game, but it's obvious that the developers had themselves found that problem and have just... there's tiny little bits in the levels that allow you to just get underneath items so you can rejig it and push yourself back into the right direction. So it's really, really well thought out. I would say the co-op game is probably better than the main game, and there's a lot less of it, which is a real shame. I think if there was a lot more co-op levels, I would recommend everyone play it, especially in co-op. I think I said in my review it's like one of the smartest platformers on Switch, and it really is. It does a lot with very little. If you don't mind a bit of backtracking and wandering around, I think the single player is great. If you do have a co-op partner who loves platform games, absolutely buy it, because it is, the co-op itself is magnificent.
Cool. Excellent. Last one to look out for. We've got over on the App Store, Nano Golf Hole-in-One came out, and this is a kind of an expansion, I suppose, to the Nitrome game Nano Golf, which is a very sort of simple lo-fi golf game. It's actually quite good fun as well. This one, as the title suggests, instead of taking multiple shots, the aim is you have to complete the course in one shot. That's it. And then you have to try and chain as many successful shots together as you can. Each time you get a hole in one, it just auto-generates a different course. They're randomly generated courses. You just need to go and go and go and go and go. Immediately playable, quite fun, you know, simple presentation, all the rest of it. Check out our Nano Golf review to see what it looks like. And it's just that, but there's one shot involved instead of several. That's it. Pretty simple. And then there are two, I guess, ARPGs. So Langrisser Mobile appeared, which is my first encounter with the game, but apparently this is a big thing that has existed for years and years and has a big following and all of that. I guess the most close comparison I can think of is Fire Emblem, the Fire Emblem mobile game. Because on the surface of it, there's lots of, you know, Japanese anime characters popping up and giving us their whole, you know, oh, I've got to fight the big god and all the rest of the stuff that you know, same old. But when the battle screen appears, it is obviously gridded and you've got the characters moving around on a grid. But the characters aren't alone. So you've got the character there. Then they've got like a couple of little soldier assistant dudes, which is basically indicating they've got an army at their back or they've got a squad at their back. And then when the battles start playing out, suddenly you get that grid view and you get the surrounded by blue tiles showing you how far you can travel and then red tiles showing you how you can travel, how far you can travel without performing a second action, I guess. And then the idea is you're trying to target enemies within your area. And then a little battle animation plays out. And that's the point when you really realize they've got a massive squad with them, because you'll say, I want this character to attack this character. And then it goes into a little instance, a little side on battlefield. And suddenly your character's at the back and there are like 10 soldiers in front of them. And likewise with the enemy. And then the best bit about the game, I think, at least from a visual perspective, is the animations that then play out. Mm. The battles kind of, they're very explosive and very impactful. So it feels like a lot of stuff is happening and that all these blows are landing. And because of the visual and audio feedback, it really feels like battle, you know? And that makes a big difference to what making you want to kind of get into these fights. Because a lot of stuff can feel very static, where like, you know, no animation will play out and just a number pops out of someone's head. I'm thinking of like, you know, a lot of ARPGs will work like that. And you're just basically watching the numbers and nothing's happening on screen. It doesn't really feel like you're fighting. Whereas this really, really goes all in with the big flashy animation fighting. And it is quite satisfying to see that happen. Mm. The game itself feels very much like the Fire Emblem Mobile one. It's perfectly slick at what it's doing. I played it for about an hour and a half because I'm looking to try and maybe do a video on it next week, possibly a review. And it's, you know, it's not exactly my genre, to be honest with you, but it, I guess it's doing what it's doing okay. I haven't been tripped up too much by free-to-play stuff.
Mm.
We'll know more next week when you go back to pg.com for the review. So, yeah, I'm slightly holding my judgment on it.
I played it for about 10 minutes, and it feels a lot like Fire Emblem Heroes, as you say, but it's not like doing a bad version of Fire Emblem Heroes. It is an enjoyable little game. There's clearly a lot of people who are interested in it.
Yes.
So that's always good to see. So there'll be a long-living community around it for a while, I'm sure.
Another one that fits roughly into the same camp is The War of Genesis, which is another ARPG. The battles in this one are much less interesting, I guess, because they are much more the 3-versus-3 lining up classic, you know, that we're all used to, take it in turns. The most striking thing about this one is when the characters are talking to each other and when they are doing little cutscenes, because the idea is you send the characters out in these giant mechs and then fly across a map landscape and then land, and then the kind of characters get out of the mechs and do battle. I'm sure the mechs themselves will fight later on, but I've only played the first half an hour. And the animation and direction of that stuff is fantastic.
Mm.
The rest of it, the actual battle, felt quite underwhelming in comparison to the interstitials. So it's one of those things where like I'm getting more pleasure watching this than I am playing it. So I'm not sure whether that's a good thing. But that's free. Same thing with Langris and Mobile. They're both free, available on all the app stores at the moment. And one mention of the game I haven't played is Detective Gallo, which is like a cartoon noir point-and-click narrative game. This is from Mixed Bag SRL, who are the guys who did Former 8 and Futuridium. I don't know if they're maybe just publishing it rather than developing it, because this is a very, very different style of game than what we're used to. But it's a classic, you know, LucasArts style point-and-click adventure with a noir detective. Very, very nice, colourful and well-drawn art style. Big, bold block colours. It's not doing the pixel art thing. It's quite modern in its art style. I don't know whether it's any good, but we've got it on the account, and I am looking forward to giving this one a go. So, Detective Gallo's the name of that one. This is premium as well, £4.99, $4.99, so we'll get back to you on whether it's worth your cash. That was quite long, I feel like. Yeah, we're an hour already in this recording.
We sat down thinking, oh, we'll just do a quick podcast.
Well, lots of PGC to debrief and decompress from. So there you go. Hopefully some of that was interesting. We're too tired to tell at this point. I'll edit out as much as I can. And it'll be a 2-minute podcast when you download it. Don't worry. But hope you heard something you like. Go and find a cool game to play. Check out the site for all of the follow-up on PGC and all the games that we played, which will basically be loads of stuff that's coming in the next year or so. So if you want to get ahead of the game, be sure to go and check out the site. And we will catch you next week for more chat. Thank you for listening. See you next time.
Goodbye.